Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar where we're talking about training leaders for success. When employees leave, it's rarely just about paychecks or workloads. It's about leadership. Developing strong managers isn't just about retention. It's about performance, culture, and compliance. From collection floors to client service teams, effective leadership can make the difference between high turnover and high engagement. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of industry experts here to explore what makes great leaders in today's collections environment. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's Knowledge Source is a training platform that helps companies address the biggest challenge in learning and knowledge retention globally. It's called the forgetting curve. If you haven't heard of the forgetting curve, or if you forgot about it, you've no doubt seen the results in your organization. The forgetting curve describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that is new hire or other types of training. And all your people experience this, regardless of whether they are new or seasoned team members. The results include mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, rework, and higher turnover. This leads to increased regulatory, financial, contractual, and reputational risk. Knowledge Source will turn the forgetting curve into deep learning, enabling your team to rapidly acquire crucial skills and knowledge, and more importantly, help them retain it. Knowledge Source will help make your job easier and empower your people with the knowledge they need to thrive. You can learn more at peakrevenuelearning.com. And if you didn't get that down, I'll drop a link in the chat that you can use to click on to visit their website. And we're going to hear from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our conversation. All right, I'm going to introduce you to our panel, and rather than read their bios, I'm going to ask each of them a question. The question is, you get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. What is it? Dennis Barton of the Barton Law Group is going to be your moderator today. Dennis, what's your song?
Well, no matter what song I pick, I'm going to hate it after a day two, I'm sure. I'll say Tangled Up in Blue by Bob Dylan.
Okay, good choice. A little off the beaten path, like that. Next up is Tim Caraveo from First Credit Services. Tim, what's your song?
I'm going to go with Free Falling from Tom Petty.
Like that one. Good one. I know that one. Yeah. Thank you. Daniel Gillespie serves as a Senior Operations Manager at the CBE Group. Daniel, what's your song?
I would go with Crazy Game of Poker by OAR.
Ooh, good choice. Mm-hmm. Like that one. Gwen Gullickson is Director of Compliance and Training at Century Credit. Gwen, what's your song?
The Rubber Band Man by the Spinners.
Mm, I like
love
that.
Love this. Excellent. Next up, we've got David Guy. David, what's your song?
Peaceful, Easy Feeling by the Eagles.
Excellent. Love that. Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, what's your song?
I think it would be Bad to the Bone, George Thorogood.
Oh, okay. Beautiful.
Excellent. Love that. That's more autobiographical, though, for you, isn't it?
It is.
Excellent. Appreciate that. All of you who are watching us live, so you get to submit questions and comments during the course of our conversation. If you've never done this before, you can use the chat or the Q&A to submit your questions or comments. The Q&A does give you the opportunity to submit questions anonymously. Just click that anonymous button, and anything you send to us, I promise, is sent anonymously. With that, I'm going to hand it off to Dennis, who's going to run our conversation today. So, Dennis, it is all yours.
Thank you. All right. We are in an industry that we talk about, and the longer you're in it, you realize it's data driven, right? You know, whether you're a collection attorney like me or a collection agency or probably even vendors, it's all about data and tracking people and how they're performing, using KPIs and using rigid KPIs to track that performance and extracting, you know, then making conclusions based off that data. But in an industry like this, how do we get people to feel like managers care about them as people, not just as, you know, parts, you know, clogs in the machine, if you will?
I mean, it's hard. We coach the how to get the want, right? We show everybody how they're supposed to do what we want them to do, but doing it how they're supposed to doesn't directly correlate to their KPI. If they're missing a goal, you can't just point at a spreadsheet. You got to figure out what works for them. Look for the gap. Is it a lack of effort or a lack of skill?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think kind of to that, explaining the the why behind the metric itself, so they can feel invested and feel like they know how to achieve the goal, and to focus more on the behaviors themselves that are leading to the outcomes versus the outcomes as a whole, so you can adjust on an individual basis to get the desired outcome you want, and it's not going to be the same behavioral changes for each employee. So when you're able to break it down on a one-on-one basis for the individual, they feel more bought in.
Yeah, I would add that we try to prioritize checking in with our agents, and we try to start everything with, how are you doing? You know, what's going on? Just a little bit of personalization before we just dive right into the numbers, since, you know, our KPIs and everybody's KPIs can be rigid. But, you know, we try to start with a little bit of personalization before we just dive right into a number and whether they were close to it, made it, beat it, whatever the case may be.
Right. So if I was going to jump in, I would say that it's important that when you're sharing the KPIs, you're understanding who you're talking to individually. So understanding and knowing the individual and how they're going to take the whatever the subject matter is, whether it's specific numbers or a philosophy or just talking goals. If you know which, you know, how they are likely to take it, whether they're people that like to be challenged or they don't want to be challenged, once you get to know them, it really helps you identify what you want to do. And then I don't want to talk about 50 different things. I want to go two or three important things to that person and their performance that are involved in the KPIs, so that they can feel individually managed rather than just saying the exact same thing to everybody exactly the same way.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, kind of to David's point with the check-ins as well, once you have that conversation over the metrics and the expectations, is having that kind of closing the loop of the feedback. If you're noticing improvement, making sure you're recognizing that and kind of instilling that positive behavior, so it becomes a habit and not something that is a continuous conversation with them. Mm-hmm. But okay, giving them that recognition is huge.
Great. And so we're talking about how we can have objective measurement and still make people feel like they're not, you know, just pieces of data on a spreadsheet. You've all talked about, you know, for the most part, talking to your people, helping them understand things. How regularly do you have those types of meetings?
We have there's a formal one-on-one meeting with the leader and the agent on a monthly basis. So those are pretty much set in stone, regular cadence. And then, you know, we are a hybrid environment, so we do see our people 3 days a week, but we also do regular huddles on a weekly basis where everybody's online, whether they're, you know, remote and or in the building, and we try to get everybody together and just go through about, you know, what are the targets for the week, you know, broad brush, and try to explain to them, you know, here's the number, here's why we're trying to hit it, and, you know, tie it back to you know, some reasoning for the organization itself, whether it's recovery, gross charge off, net charge off, whatever the metric is that, you know, we want to put in front of the agent that week.
Okay.
We do something similar, a one-on-one scheduled every month at the beginning of the month to look back at where areas of opportunity are, what went well, as well as we set it up for the expectation for themselves, but also their expectation of what they need from their management. And then there's weekly meetings kind of following up on those topics from the individual one-on-ones.
Yes. Yeah. So we do a lot of daily huddles. So we have a quick 5-minute huddle at the beginning of the day, and we do that mixed, whether they're in office or out of office. We all just jump in the same meeting, and we go over anything important that we want to talk about. But it also, you know, as a somebody who likes people on time, it also forces them to want to be at work right at time. It's a bit embarrassing for them, or, you know, at least that's the way it's kind of become with, if you're not on that call right at start time, it's noticed. And so, you know, it is also just the discipline of what we always want to do. And it's in, you know, to lead by example and make sure I'm always on that call on or before time. It helps a lot. And I think that's what helped drive the whole team from accepting it, not showing up 5 minutes late, 10 minutes late to work where they can sneak in. All of a sudden they're on camera right then and there to go. So it's been pretty successful. But we do weekly and monthly individual stuff, but that morning huddle really sets the stage for, that's why we're here and here's where we're going to go. So
Tim, you're talking about, you have a group meeting rather than individual meetings on that 5 minute huddle. That's group.
Yeah. It's just, everybody's there. We see exactly who's there. We go over who maybe collected some big payments that day or the previous day, any specific one-off instructions on if we're doing something special, any special campaigns or anything. And then we break out and we'll go around and talk to people. I would like to say daily, but I would tell you the frontline managers absolutely talk to all their people every day. I'm going to talk to all my direct reports every day, going through the numbers. And again, I'm big on, you know, the old Stephen Covey, three wildly important goals. So I like to keep my numbers to one or two things with each person and each department that we're really focusing on continuously.
Great. All right. So you have these leaders and they're having these meetings, and whether it be you or your you know, some other manager doing that, how do you get that manager in a position where they're able to have those meetings with those folks to go over numbers and data and exactly what people are doing without the employees feeling micromanaged? Because honestly, I've gotten some feedback about employees feeling from my team, and if they're a little micromanaged, we have those specific conversations. So how do you, you know, get past that or through that?
So it's really it's a performance coaching thing. So it's really not a formal meeting, but it is an opportunity to have a conversation. And with people performing great and stuff, it might just be, hey, great day yesterday, saw your numbers go on, you know. So it doesn't need to be a super formal conversation, but just a interaction so that they know that. It also, what I've found is it gives them the opportunity to keep their questions, knowing they're going to talk to somebody, so you don't get interrupted yourself all day long with people wanting to find out this. They know they're going to talk to you eventually, or their manager eventually, and it really streamlines my ability to manage my day because they know that they're going to, you know. And so sometimes some people want to just keep talking to you, and I think, you know, it might be their excuse to get off the phone for a while, but you could just say, hey, we're going to meet before the end of the day. Why don't we talk about it then? Because then you're controlling it. They're not, you know, they're not interrupting you from something. Maybe you have reports to people above you that need to be done. So it really helps the manager control it. It's really been a successful way to manage everybody and myself as I'm going through each day, week, or month. So sometimes it's you know, and if you don't get to somebody, it might just be a quick email saying, hey, sorry, I got sideways today. Let's catch up tomorrow. It really depends on how many people you're trying to connect with on a daily basis. But, you know, most people have 5 to 10 at the most, and you should be able to see everybody for a minute or two each day and at least look them in the eye or talk to them on the phone to make sure they're appreciated, and you know, what gets inspected gets respected.
Yeah, I think the other thing that works good for me is a skip level meetings where whether it's one on one or a handful of your agents just get in a room with me and we just talk about the business, talk about the processes, policies, our systems, whatever the case may be. So if they you give them that voice, and you learn a lot in those. Sometimes you learn things you didn't really want to hear, but it can help you with the efficiency of your business, or, you know, you may pick up on a behavior of an agent or a comment that he or she makes that you can take back to their supervisor, where, you know, your supervisor may be doing something completely innocent, but that individual agent maybe just doesn't like to be managed that way. I mean, I know a lot of agents that work for me today, they love the private praise. But if you put a comment in the Slack channel about their performance, they're kind of just shy, right? And they don't like the spotlight. So the skip level meetings can kind of bring a lot to the forefront that you can action on.
Great. All right. Well, we've talked a little bit about, meetings and helping people understand the KPIs and all that. I'd like to circle back to the title of this, where it says employees don't quit jobs, they quit managers. Do you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yes, 100%. People who don't feel, recognized don't want to stick around for something like that. I provide my team with a lot of ownership and transparency for their items. I don't have to micromanage them because they're in charge of their own outcomes every day. They understand the expectation for every section of business that they have and the SLAs for our clients. And when they're not maintaining those, there's an expectation of a remediation for that. I get a daily update from each of my team members on what their upcoming load for the day is. I get a follow-up at the end of the day telling me what they struggled with, what they had, needed some additional guidance on. And at the end of the week, the entire department gets together and has a round table for the things that they've identified. It's been game changing for my team to give them the ability to own their own stuff instead of me constantly going around behind them and saying, oh, why does this look like this? If we know what the expectation is and we can address it ahead of time, it's given 11 people this opportunity to show initiative where before they were just doing what was asked of them.
Do you have does anyone have a specific formula, plan, procedure, process in your companies when it comes to training your leaders, identifying leaders, and then putting them through a process? You know, we all know that competent, at least all of it, I have seen in my life, my life experience, that competence, if it's not number one, it's pretty close. Because if you're not competent at what you're doing, people are not going to follow you. You're not going to have any credibility. But it takes a lot more than competence in order to be a good leader. So, do you have a process that can take those competent people and then turn them into good leaders or improve any leadership potential that they already have?
We've just hired 3 new supervisors in our area. So we've had to identify, who's going to be the best, and it's not always your top performers. And I think for me, kind of that switch where it's not about me, it's more of the we and their idea of servant leadership, where you're going to have to sacrifice your own time and sometimes sanity to do what's best for the team, and somebody that is high integrity as well, so that when they're looked at for questions or decision making, it's trusted across the entire team that it is the correct way to move forward. So when we're looking for people, it's, those that really put people first and are willing to invest in their people, because overall that's how we're all going to grow. So for me, it's kind of that servant leadership trait is when I'm looking to promote somebody new.
Yeah. So we don't have a workbook that says we're going to go A through Z of to bringing leaders on. But one thing we do try to do is anytime we are looking for new leaders, whether it's a team lead or an actual supervisor or manager, I like to post it and put it out there for everybody. And what that allows me to do is see, A, who's interested, and That way it doesn't look like favoritism or something like that, or it's already preordained that so-and-so is going to get the job or the position. But what it also, you know, and so a lot of times it may already be that choice has been made, or you think that choice is made. But sometimes you get people that come out and you're like, oh, I didn't even know they were interested in being a leader. And it really gives you an opportunity to say, hey, you know, maybe they've struggled a bit, or it took them a while to learn. But it gives you a chance to give them very specific feedback. Well, if you showed up on time every day. Well, if you, you know, if you understood that, you know, getting involved in the conversations helps you gain credibility because then you could be the leader. Whatever that person might need some help on, it also gets them to buy into the process more because now you're telling them this is what you probably should do to become that leader. And so throwing it out for everyone, it eliminates the absolute, I didn't even have a chance. It's like, you didn't want a chance. You got to jump in yourself. So I do wish we had a more structured book, you know, avenue of how we get a leader, but it's really just that first part is what we really focus on is who's interested. And then we can start putting them in a position to get to that next step sooner or later, if that's what their path needs to be.
Akeisha makes a good point in the comments. She said that you should always be training your next leader. And I'll let you guys all talk about. So I'm going to actually to take that Nikisha comment one step further. You know, I've heard Kelly Van Cleve of ACA, Director of Education there. She's given multiple sessions on succession planning for your, you know, for your leaders and your company. Do any of you have a succession plan? It's a little different than training your leaders, but a succession plan about how people are going to maybe a path that they can go through in the company, or just making sure you have your yourself covered if someone were to leave.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a formal plan, but I think what I try to do from my direct reports is, you know, we're having a regular weekly one-on-one check-in about the business, but you know, part of that on a regular basis is talking about career growth and development and what do they want next? Because you do have to find out if somebody is, for lack of a better term, satisfied with the level that they're at today and the level that they're or the amount that they're contributing to the organization. And I always tell my direct reports, I'm like, you know, whatever job you have and the company that you work for, we're kind of like I lived in Vegas for a while. So we're kind of like a Vegas buffet. How much do you want to put on your plate? And you know, how involved do you want to be and how much do you want to contribute? Right. And then, you know, we can go from there. And, you know, the longer I've been in the industry, you know, I try to just constantly help them evolve and, you know, dump information their way. Because they need to not only learn what I'm going to ask them to do, but they need to learn what people are asking me to do. Because if they want to, you know, move higher into any organization, they need to get a feel for, you know, each company has a different senior leadership culture, but they need to start being exposed to that. And we also do those skip levels too for the people that I report to. They'll have regular quarterly check-ins with the people that work for me, just to kind of get a pulse check as to, you know, what are this person's strengths, opportunities, and you know, what do they want to do next.
Yeah, I'm going to put a quick pause on the discussion if I can, but to introduce Chris as our sponsor, Mike.
Yeah. Great job, Dennis. Thanks. That's what I was exactly coming to do. Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning is sponsoring today's webinar. So, Chris, it's all you.
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. Peak Revenue Learning provides Knowledge Source. It's the leading knowledge skills and compliance training platform designed specifically for organizations with collection operations. Knowledge Source helps companies simplify training, reduce costs, and ensure consistent performance, whether employees are on-site or remote. As mentioned earlier, every organization that trains employees faces a powerful challenge known as the forgetting curve. It describes the rapid decline in retained knowledge following learning events, whether those are new hire onboarding or ongoing training. When knowledge fades, the consequences are real. Increased errors and compliance risk, more consumer complaints, missed revenue opportunities, and lower employee confidence and engagement, and higher turnover. At the same time, many organizations still view employee development as an expense rather than an investment. That mindset can significantly impact morale and retention. In fact, an IBM study found that employees who feel that they aren't being developed to reach their career goals are 12 times more likely to leave their company. Their traditional model, onboarding followed by an annual refresher, simply isn't enough. Most leaders we speak with recognize that spaced, repetitive micro-learning drives deeper retention, stronger performance, and sustained mastery. And that is exactly what Knowledge Source delivers. Our clients, our companies committed to maintaining a high level of assurance that their teams have mastered and continue to maintain mastery of the knowledge and skills required. In summary, with Knowledge Source, you can increase quality, decrease compliance risk, grow revenue, lower training costs, and reduce turnover. If you'd like to learn more, please visit our website, peakrevenuelearning.com, or feel free to dial me directly at 803-521-0031. We're here to make your job easier and your organization stronger and more successful. Thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, peakrevenuelearning.com is the website. Dennis, I'll throw it back to you.
Thank you. Regarding the forgetting curve, Chris, do you apply any of those processes to 10 and 13-year-old girls?
Good luck with that.
Have some issues. My company, you know, we're struggling with these two employees, if you will. So, you know what, I'll get with the individual. It's fine. Going back to leadership of adults, I guess. Melissa talked about mentoring. There's a mentor. They offer a mentorship program. Have any of you offer that to your employees to have, you know, some mentoring to help them become leadership material within the company?
Nothing officially, but I mean, we definitely take interest in the folks that are showing the initiative and the want. You know, David made a good point about asking them what they want on their plate, what their intentions are moving forward with the company. I think I probably wouldn't be the only person here who moved somebody on just because they saw their potential before, but that doesn't equate to success in the long run if it's not what their goal is. So we don't internally have anything set up specifically for mentoring, but I do think that we try and encompass that in the culture.
We do have one at CBE, where it's a 2-year program, and it's different scenarios and things like that that you may encounter at the next level up, and then do a presentation to like the executive team and the ones that are currently making the decision. So you kind of have a cohort group, so to speak, that you work with on different scenarios that could be real life application, or it could be something that maybe is going to be in the future, but different roadblocks you may run into, how to resolve it, and what all the capabilities are, and then have a presentation to the executive team, and then receive feedback on, you know, what went well, what were the areas of opportunity, and maybe how to better communicate or problem solve moving forward.
Yeah, I was going to say that, by the way, Daniel, that's awesome that you guys have that's structured like that. I have never had something structured like that, but one of the things that I take on as part of me helping out the team, having done this for a lot of years, is when I see somebody has a skill that they need to enhance to get to the next level, I will sit them down, whether it's Excel or speaking or PowerPoint or, you know, just talking in front of everybody, setting goals, running contests, all that kind of stuff. I want to give them, you know, some extracurricular stuff, whether it's reading or information. A lot of times it's, you know, something that's pertinent, but not necessarily specifically, you know, like just a self-help book type of thing, saying, hey, this is a great book. You should really read. You should read this book, and then wait and say, hey, if you read it, I want you to come back and talk to me about it. And that way I see if they actually are that interested to go out and self-help themselves. And if I see that they are, then I'll continue to bring different things to them so that they can get to that next level. If I'm throwing these things out there and they're not taking them, then that's going to tell me a lot too as well. So a lot of the mentoring is, I don't want to mentor them more than they want to be mentored. And I want to make sure I absolutely get their buy-in for themselves, because at the end of the day, they've got to make sure they go do what they have to do to get better. You know, it's always easy to work on the stuff you're good at. You got to work on the stuff that you need help on as much as you need to do that. And I would say you have to do more work on the stuff you need help on than just keep doing the same stuff you're already good at.
You know, Tim, you talked about books. You also referenced Stephen Covey earlier. I have given a couple of people that I think could elevate into management. I've recommended The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I don't know if there's a better leadership book ever written. But 100%. Another book I think is incredible is How to Win Friends and Influence People, which I thought was going to be hokey, and it turned out to be an incredible read, very well written. I think it was in the 1930s, which goes to show how things can change so dramatically in our world, and yet who we are as people and what drives us and, you know, what drives us and then makes us perform or not perform is all the same thing.
Absolutely.
Two good books. Okay. This is something I would like to know. There's a lot of companies that are really small, a lot of agencies that are small, or, you know, and so it's kind of easy to see if the person's not a very good leader, because they're right in front of you basically all the time, and you're just seeing them not perform. But with the bigger companies, or maybe even the smaller ones too, how do you identify when the leader's not doing well and when you need to jump in and maybe help out?
Well, so if they're willing to allow you to do that, I think one of the things that you need to, when you don't have a good leader, is you need to make sure you're finding ways to lead around them as much as you are. You know, you may not be ignoring what they want. You just want to be able to bottle it up and distribute it in a way that's going to be functional and productive for the people that are your peers and or people below you. So that, you know, sometimes, you know, when, you know, I think one of the things was about, you know, if it's the executives want one thing and what's right for the managers, you just need to make sure the message might be correct. You just need to make sure you are able to digest it and then share it with everybody in a manner that they're going to buy into. And you can't just say, well, it's not my idea, but this is what they want, you know, kind of thing. You have to be able to own it and do what's right for the company. But at the same time, you need to make it to where people are not going to resent an order, but get into an order and lean into it and be productive through it.
We do a lot of anonymous surveys. We do a monthly survey, and we do like a very large survey every 6 months, where we encourage not just the, you know, clicking the boxes of the scale for various questions, but we encourage a lot of free form. And then we, you know, drill that down and categorize it by leader and then by department. And so a lot of stuff will pop on those surveys that can, you know, help help out the broad leadership scope of the particular department, like in my case, collections and recoveries, and try to figure out what we could be, doing better as a broader organization. And then, some of those, sometimes things will pop on those surveys that are relative to a certain individual that you just got to go peel the onion back and try to figure out how you can make them better.
You're on mute, Dennis.
Thank you. Sorry. The old model of management by walking around, and that was great, right? Because you walk around, you can hear everybody, and I used to love that. And then we had a global pandemic, and then everybody left, and then they didn't really come back. But, I mean, for me anyway, everybody works remotely except for one or two people. So it becomes more difficult to manage folks. How about you? What have you seen there? Has things being remote impacted your ability to watch over your managers and develop managers?
We brought almost everybody back. I don't experience this type of issue.
All of our management is on site as well. From that, occasional times go work from home if it's an appointment or things like that, but we have all of our management staff on site daily. But I think it can even just go with managing work from home employees and developing them. It just looks a little bit different, and I think takes more intentional effort to continue to reach out and have those touch bases, because it's always easy when you're walking around the office or you're hearing things to address it in the moment. So I think just being more intentional with your time with your work from home employees, whether that's management or associates, and then having that human side of it as well. So you're not only talking to those remote employees when it's a KPI issue or performance or whatever it may be. And then having those true conversations with feedback and development. But I think you just got to be more intentional with your time when it comes to the work from home aspect.
Yeah, it's the same conversation. It's just not physical there. So, the beauty of the remote, the more you do it, the more technology you build around it. So we can see, whether it's good or bad or indifferent, I can see how many times somebody didn't touch their computer in 3 minutes. I can see how, and we consider that idle time. So we're able to literally see if somebody's not doing what we need them to do. Obviously, when they're in it, and that's with the manager. So I'm really talking more about managers, because managers aren't on the phone all day. You can't, you don't see them in the dialing queue. You don't see, are they really truly getting, on the phone talking to somebody else? Are they really breaking down, a batch track to make sure we're not missing one batch over another, or are we building the pool? Are we doing all that kind of stuff? And that does take time to be quote unquote out of sight, but you want to be able to feel that they're doing, as a manager, they're doing their job. You don't want to have a camera on them when they're home, when you're doing that. But it's really just, are they able to respond at the level that you would have expected them if they were sitting 20 feet away from you in a cubicle? And that really helps you. And unfortunately, they have to prove to you that they can't be given that much freedom, because I don't believe in micromanaging by default. I think they will teach me how much I have to quote unquote micromanage them based on how effective they are. Are their collectors saying they're not being able to get a hold of them? Are they coming to me and I can't get a hold of so-and-so? All that kind of stuff comes into play, and it's not any different than when everyone was physical. So you just got to get over the fact that you can't physically see them and just use your technology around you to still get to the same spot.
Yeah, we're hybrid, but I would say on the leadership side, I do have a lot of conversations with the managers about being extremely fluent and proficient in Slack, or your organizations, may use Teams, but each of our collections teams have Slack channels. So it may sound interesting, but we actually monitor Slack activity just in the sense of, you know, if we haven't heard from an agent in a while, right, we try to figure out if everything's okay, because we all have the, you know, the behind the scenes production tools to find out about, you know, outbound calls or, you know, queue time and all of that. But and that could certainly be part of it. But, you know, we try to find out from agents that, because I do have a mix of people that are fully remote from being grandfathered from the pandemic. So we kind of watch people's activity just to make sure that they're still have a level of engagement. And then on the leadership side, we try to do a lot with the managers about their own Slack messages. And, you know, it's kind of one of the old rules, right? Read your email 3 times before you hit send. So now it's, you know, read your Slack message a few times before you hit send as well, because, you know, the written word and the verbal, you know, can be totally interpreted differently. So we try to teach our leaders to, you know, be careful and, you know, be cognizant of the situation too.
I heard an agent of a professional athlete say, "I tell my players, don't hit send." Advice that will save you from the headlines. And David, I like how you say you want to make sure people are okay when they're, you know, you check on them, make sure they're okay, make sure they're healthy and fit, right? Not that they're just doing their job. That's nice. And Nikisha said, manage to behavior. I'm assuming she's referencing remote work. I know that's what we do. I mean, you have numbers, you got to hit your numbers, and I'm not going to be all over you. We're looking at how the numbers are, and if you're doing great, you know, if you're hitting your numbers, and we think it's, then I don't know. And we also use collaboration room AI, which is a way to monitor and confirm, which Reagan's phrase, trust but verify, right? So we trust and verify. But really, we do. We manage to the behavior. Okay. Next question, next kind of topic. What do you think the earliest warning signs are that a manager is the root cause of turnover? You know, you're starting to see some turnover in an area, whether it be a small company or a big area. What do you think, you know, what are the big warning signs that are pointing to it's the manager's management issue? Whether it be another manager or even, I hate to say it, but even ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
When your performers that were telling you about the issues stop telling you, because it sounds like it's falling on deaf ears. You know, you get people who are just going to stop performing if they're not feeling like the manager is who they want to perform for. I think you need to not just listen to the people who are telling you things, but listen when they stop. When there wasn't any resolution to the things you were hearing and you stop hearing that stuff anymore, why?
Yep, no, that's a great point. You know, to me, I look at the managers and the company turnover, but as well as turnover within my immediate groups, is voluntary versus involuntary. So if it's voluntary turnover where they're just leaving, but they were performing well, that means we've got a bad message going on. Because they're performing, they're doing well, but now sometimes somebody just decides they don't want to be in collections. We've all gone through that. But I mean, somebody who's a professional, they're doing well, and they leave, and you're surprised by it. That's a really big sign that there's a problem. And then involuntary, where we're firing people, or that's when you got to look back. Are our goals not realistic? Are we telling them what they have to do and they just shut down? That's a bad message that the managers aren't communicating. They're not training. They're not helping their people. So I really look at it. Those are the two things that I try to separate a little bit, is voluntary versus involuntary, because I'm going to approach those a little differently in trying to figure out what's going on versus just, you know, deciding that, you know, well, they just weren't good enough for us. So that, you know, a lot of times it's because we didn't put in the right processes to get them to where we want to do. So you want to make sure that you're really truly giving everybody the right message. And I think it was mentioned a few minutes ago, the message that they can interpret for them to be successful or content, because that's when they feel like they can't win or they're not heard. That's usually when they decide, let me see what else is going on at somewhere else. So that's kind of my approach to it.
Yeah, I think Gwen hit it on the head. Silence. If we see silence from certain teams or certain people that, you know, work for a manager, that's a kind of a red flag. And then obviously I think we probably all track turnover by leader, to Tim's point about voluntary and involuntary. But yeah, for me, it's really suddenly a team is silent, or a person that always talked in the past is just, you know, kind of shut down.
Yeah. Gwen, you talked about, you know, people stop telling you things. I found that to be true also with, if the manager, to like kind of what you're, a little bit of what you're saying, when things are falling on deaf ears, when there's no follow-up from management, nothing's happening. Yeah. That's been a, you know, even if they, or if they say, yeah, you know, we're going to get to that, and they just don't. So silence and also lack of follow-up, we'll follow through, follow-up by management to those issues. Okay, I want to get to a comment here by Melissa, who said managers should blame everyone else. Oh, wait, no, she said don't blame. Sorry. Never use blaming word. You know, a word I have found not to use is why. Hey, why'd you do that? Why this get the defenses all up? I'd like to ask you, I mean, I think it's a, I like Melissa's point here. If something goes wrong, so they just start throwing out blamey words, discuss it more diplomatically and whatnot. But how do you balance, you know, the kinder, gentler approach that we need to take to people, especially nowadays with millennials, with, you know, consequence and accountability, which is not, you know, really, at least I have found that a lot of folks don't like that, especially. So how do we balance those concerns?
Radical.
For me, consistency. Not everybody's going to receive information the same, but the expectations need to be the same. And then us as leaders, we need to maybe adjust our delivery to the individual. But that's been one of the highest points of tension, I guess, is when you have one leader not holding somebody else to the same standards that another leader is. And I think that can create a lot of animosity amongst the teams. So for me, it's consistency from beginning to their entire employment. So there's never any questions. And if you're delivering it in a kind, respectful manner with kind of the why behind it and what's in it for them, I feel like you can get the most out of them, and people are more willing to take the feedback. But it also kind of goes into what David was saying about the check-ins that aren't just about the work and the KPIs, like how they're doing as individuals, because if you've built that relationship up with them, they're going to be more willing to receive maybe difficult feedback that they don't want to hear. A lot of people are perfectionists and usually are their own biggest critics. But if you're doing it consistently and being respectful with it, we found that it is usually received better than just sort of talking at them and not explaining the why.
Yeah, one thing we got, I hadn't done this in years, and one thing we got back to recently is we actually just created a committee of one collector from each department who volunteered to be part of it. And then each department could either vote on that person, but we just have, you know, a meeting couple times a month just to go over things that they see and do. And so it's not one specific department, but it's a group representing their department and then talking about them. So we've done some joint contests with it. So we did kind of like everybody drafted certain number of people from each department, depending on the size. And so we got a chance to meet each other more, but it also made people more willing to go into those committee meetings because there's no managers involved, and actually bring up ideas. And once they're presenting ideas, whether they're realistic or not is sometimes debatable, but at least they're getting involved. And when we can put some of those things in place, they feel more committed to the, and that they're listened to and stuff like that. So the committee has been very positive, and they've actually brought up some great things that we just were not somehow we weren't seeing it, but apparently it was a big enough deal for them to present that, you know, just how we should handle the break room and some of that stuff. It's been more of a community that way rather than the managers all telling them how it's going to be all the time. So that's been pretty successful.
Looking at Hendrick's comment, you know, when issues are raised by going back to, you know, when issues are raised by employees, to making them feel, you know, heard and giving them that, you know, making it feel like they're respected, and we create an environment of openness and trust. I think I heard all that in marriage counseling too. it's like the same thing that works with your employees works with your romantic relationships, and I think parenting, it's all the same kind of stuff. Okay. And Akeisha talks about clear documentation and communication. You know what? I tell you what, as an employee, as an attorney, talk about policies and procedures on a regular basis when it comes to litigation. That's often helpful. But even in the operations side, it's often helpful to make sure that Daniel was talking about earlier, things are clear and consistent. And when you have that documented, it's easier to make things clear and consistent because or maybe it was David, I forgot which one of you said it. I think it was David. When you're putting things in a text, sometimes, you know, you're trying to communicate quickly to people, but here's how we're going to do things from now on. I mean, that gets kind of, it cannot always be clear, but when you take the time to put it in a policy and a procedure and then train it effectively, that's when things are really clear and consistent. You guys agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So let me ask you this. We got about 5 minutes left. Let's just talk about training in general. Recruiting. When you're recruiting someone, do you look at someone who has the potential to be a good leader? I mean, is leadership potential one of the things that you're hiring for, or only if you really need somebody at that time?
I would say that we're always looking for the next leader, you know, and then just seeing if that's something they want to also be involved in. So, you know, I'll have conversations like, have you ever, you know, even if I know that they have or haven't, I'll just say, have you ever considered management, and just see what kind of answer comes. And that way it's a conversation to sometimes just get people to respect their own position, because now all of a sudden we're thinking, oh, you know, they're thinking of me being a leader. Maybe, you know, they start projecting that way, but I'm always looking for people that, you know, that least likely. And that's, you know, again, that's why I want to post a job to everybody, and anybody who says they're interested, I don't just discount them. I give them the minute or two to, you know, or 5 minutes, explain what, you know, what they think the job entails and whether or not they'd be good for it. And it really does make them feel like they're a part of the process and that they are being looked at. And so it's always good to be looking, and don't discount anyone just because, you know, you might have a set opinion just based on however long you've worked with them.
Yeah, we do that as well. I think, I know it's kind of one of the age old interview questions, but you know, whether it's a collection agent or a lead or whatever the case may be, I always do the walk me through your resume question, because we find, you know, some people that have kind of moved in and out of leadership in the past. And then when I see those candidates, you know, come before me, I really like to find out what happened and why it happened. Because was it a situation? Was it a personal issue that they'd be willing to share? Because that too can be how you find your next leadership within your organization, somebody that, you know, is interviewing for an agent job, but you can see that, you know, two stops in the past they were in leadership, and, you know, what happened? Did the company fold or something like that? And, you know, what are they like? And you know, try to figure out if we might be a best fit down the road, even if we don't have something open immediately.
Yeah, we do the same thing, and actually my next supervisor is one that in the past had a lot of experience and has been on the phone and frankly probably underemployed, and the opportunity presented itself. But I think the leadership traits are transferable to all roles. It may just look a little bit different in each role, but if somebody has what I would consider traits that make them a strong leader, typically they're going to perform well, whether they're on the phones as an agent, a team captain, our next supervisor, because a lot of it is pride in work, putting other people first, doing the right thing, even when the microscope isn't on you, and sort of just leading by example, so to speak.
That's a darn good point. All right, we got a little about a minute and a half left. Let's do parting shots. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. Yeah, when I say parting shot, what's the one thing above everything else that you want people to take away from our session today?
Lead by example. I mean, you don't build a high-performing culture by ignoring the metrics or the people that you're doing it with. You build it by being the person your team wants to follow to the grind.
Nice.
Right. So I'll jump in if you don't mind. So I have a statement that I always make, and it's to all managers, is you have to be above reproach. So you can't tell somebody why, you're always late if they're always late. You can't say, you have to make sure that you are not contradicting yourself. So, the saying is, do as I say, end as I do. And that's how you can have so much more credibility if you're not contradicting everything you're telling them with your actions, because I just believe in that wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
For
David? Oh, sir, go
yeah.
ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, make sure that your people hear your message and don't walk away with your emotion.
Ooh, that sounds, that's, I love that.
All right.
Okay. We'll put that in a quotations book. Daniel.
For me, it's more so like when I'm looking at my leadership team, is one person cannot create a great culture, but one person can ruin it. So making sure that you have the correct people in place that are going to fit your organizational, whether it's core values or goals, whatever it may be, making sure you've got the right person in that spot.
That's an excellent point. That's tough when hiring is difficult. Sometimes we tolerate people because we're afraid we can't find a replacement, but that person is kind of eroding things from within. Excellent. Well, hey guys, you've been great today. Thank you so much for participating. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis. Excellent job
Thanks, Dennis.
moderating as always. Thanks for being here. And then Gwen, Tim, David, Daniel, thanks on behalf of everybody watching and listening. Thanks for taking time out of your schedules to be here and share your insights with everybody. Chris, I want to thank you and Peak Revenue Learning a final time for sponsoring today's webinar. PeakRevenueLearning.com is the website. If you're watching us live, thank you so much. Or if you're watching a recording, thank you so much for being here and making us part of your day. If you're watching us live, we're back in an hour with a workshop at 3 o'clock Eastern where we're talking and walking people through how to vibe code. If you've heard it, you've seen these new apps that are out there. They can turn anybody into a programmer just by being able to type. You don't need to know languages. You don't need to know coding, but you can develop all these cool apps and software and all these great things that you can do. So we've got a couple of experts coming at 3 o'clock Eastern to walk people through how to do that. So if you haven't signed up, I dropped a link in the chat. If you can't make that, we're back with a webinar at 1 o'clock Eastern tomorrow, where we're talking about AI and the future of the present. We're breaking down Heath Morgan's new book, The Memory Project, and applying it to AI and how it's going to shape the future. Also, we'll link in the chat to sign up for that. So we'd love to see you back for one or both of those. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.